Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 33, Text Number 34. Yat pada panka chaparaga nisheva tripta. Yoga prabhava viduta kila karma bandaha. Swayam charanti munayopi nayamanas. Chasyachayata vapusha kuta eva bandaha. Yatpa of the lotus feet. Paraga of the dust. Nisheva by the service. Triptaha satisfied. Yoga prabhava.
Yoga prabhava.
By the power of yoga.
By the power of yoga.
Vidhuta.
Vidhuta.
Washed away.
Washed away.
Akila.
Akila.
All.
All.
Karma.
Karma.
Of fruitive activity.
Of fruitive activity.
Bandaha.
Bandaha.
Whose bondage.
Whose bondage.
Swayam.
Swayam.
Freely.
Charanti,
charanti, they act. Munaya,
munaya,
wise sages.
Munaya.
Api,
api,
also.
Also.
Na,
na,
never.
Never.
Nahyamanaha,
nahyamanaha,
becoming bound up.
Tasya,
of him.
Of him.
Ichaya.
Ichaya.
By his desire,
atta,
accepted, apushaha,
transcendental bodies,
kutaha, where,
eva,
indeed,
mandaha,
bondage. Material activities never entangle the devotees of the Supreme Lord. Who are fully satisfied by serving the dust of his lotus feet. Nor do material activities entangle those intelligent sages who have freed themselves from the bondage of all fruitive reactions by the power of yoga. So how could there be any question of bondage for the Lord himself, who assumes his transcendental forms according to his own sweet will? Text 35. Gopinam tat patinam cha savesham eva dehinam yontas chalati sodhya shaha kridana kridane neha dehabak. He who lives as the overseeing witness within the gopis and their husbands, and indeed within all embodied living beings, assumes forms in this world to enjoy transcendental pastimes. Purport, we certainly do not assume our bodies to enjoy transcendental pastimes as the Lord does. We eternal souls have accepted material bodies by force because of our foolish attempt to enjoy this material world. Lord's forms are all eternal, spiritual existence, and cannot be reasonably equated with our temporary flesh. Since Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord dwelling within the gopis, the so-called husbands, and all other living beings, what possible sin could there be on his part if he embraces some of the beings he himself has created? What fault could there be if the Lord goes with the gopis to a secret place, since he already dwells within the most secret part of every living being, the core of the heart? Om Agyanatimirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Gurim Yakripatamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. This is a response to Parikshit Maharaj's question. How then could he have... How could he have violated them by touching other men's wives, violating the moral laws? He is the original speaker, follower, and guardian of moral laws. He has descended to this earth, along with his plenary portion, to destroy a religion and re-establish religious principles. Then how come he's breaking religious principles? His appearance is to establish religious principles, but then it appears that he's engaging in activities that are just completely transgressing all of the religious principles that he's supposedly appear to establish. Good question. O faithful upholder of vows, please destroy our doubt by explaining to us what purpose the self-satisfied Lord of the Yadus had in mind when he behaved so contemptibly. Contemptible. Right. Contemptibly. Jugupsitam. Contemptible. It means just flaunting the laws. Right. It's a very serious crime to be in contempt of court. This is a good question. So here's part of the response by Sukadev Goswami. Material activities never entangle the devotees. So for a start, what to speak of the Supreme Lord himself? Those who are his followers are never entangled by material activities. And the yogis, the munis, great sages, who've engaged in yoga, interesting here, it's mentioned, even those who engage in yoga practice, right? Not just the devotees. But even the yogis who drill the breath and perform the even just external practices can become freed from the reactions of their fruitive activities. It's mentioned here. So He's saying, if the devotees are completely free from material reactions, and even the yogis who perform austerities can become free from the bondage of their fruitive activities, then what question is there about bondage for the Lord himself? What question is there? There's no question, actually, of his ever experiencing a reaction for his activities. Even if they appear to be misdeeds, apparent. So the devotees are not entangled by material activities. The yogis get free from their reactions, because that doesn't mean that they can't fall down, but at least they can get free from the reactions by their act, by their yoga, by their austerities. They can get free from their reactions. So they want to speak of Krishna, who is always in a transcendental position. He's always in a liberated position. There's no time when he is not liberated. Ever. No bondage. Krishna mentions this, actually, in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which we're studying at the moment. Namam karmani limpanti. For me, any kind of work, Krishna says, namam, never for me, basically. For me, never karmani, any kind of work, limpanti, effects, basically. Namam karmani limpanti. Krishna says, whatever I do, it doesn't affect me. Right? This is what we would all like to be. Whatever we do, no flies on us. Just like water off a duck's back. Right? Whatever we do, there's no reaction. And of course, this is the great contrast between us and Krishna. Big contrast. We have to be very careful about what we do. Right? We have to be extremely careful about what we do. Krishna doesn't have to worry at all about anything he does. Whatever Krishna does, it's always for his pleasure. What to speak of being for his pleasure? It's always for the benefit of everybody. That's his transcendental nature. Whereas the activities performed by the living entities, they are prescribed. Right? We have many prescriptions. Speaking of the yoga system, yama, niyama. Things to avoid, things to do. Any yoga practice, any yoga system. Actually, for anyone to be successful at anything, they have to avoid certain things and accept other things. So I have to be very careful. But Krishna doesn't, there's no activity that Krishna performs that affects him. Namam karmani limpanti. And so therefore, Krishna mentions before this in the fourth chapter, Chaturvanyam maya srishtam guna karma vibhaga saha. This is why the Varnashram system is recommended by Krishna. Because each one of us is covered over by certain combinations of the material energy. According to the modes of material nature, each one of us has a mixture of coverings. So for those predominantly in the mode of ignorance, then they have certain types of activities to perform. Those who are in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance, they're recommended to perform different types of activities. For those in the mode of passion predominantly, then they have a set of activities to perform. Those in the mode of goodness have another set of activities to perform. It's like, you know, when you're ill, you go to the doctor. And then the doctor gives you a prescription. Assuming that the doctor knows what he's talking about, he gives you the right prescription. Huh? And then you take that prescription according to the directions on the label. 2 tablets 3 times a day before meals or whatever. And then you become, assuming that the doctor knows what he's talking about, you'll be cured. To remove, because ultimately the purpose of following all of these yama and niyama rules and regulations is to elevate. We were discussing this the other day. The whole purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to elevate people. Because this is why, study of the rasa dance has to be done very, very carefully and with the right understanding. And so Maharaj Parikshit's asking, hang on a second, what's going on here? You say that Krishna's appearing for the benefit of everybody. But if everybody goes off and follows Krishna's example, runs off into the forest at night with young girls, then what will happen? Everybody will become degraded. Right? Very important question, actually. Everybody will become degraded. And yet, Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya pranir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srajamiham no. Sambhavami yuge yuge. Is that right? That's the next verse. Yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata abhyutana madhamasya tadatmanam srajami aham. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. this is, and then in the next verse, dharma samstapanataya, I'm here to establish religious principles. Actually, as is pointed out, in the purports, and as Prabhupada teaches us, as Acharyas teaches, actually establishing religious principles is a secondary activity that Krishna performs. And the rasa dance is a unique example where Krishna appears paritranaya sadunam, actually to please his devotees. Right? Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book that many of these gopis were actually the sages in Dandakaranya. Right? And when they saw Lord Ramchandra, they were so attracted to his beauty. They wanted to, they had such affectionate feelings for him. They were so drawn to him, they wanted to associate with him in that conjugal mood. And so consequently, then the Lord gave him the blessing. Yes, in my next appearance, you can associate with me in that fashion. And so therefore, in order to facilitate the drama, if you like, and the intimacy of the relationship between Krishna and his devotee, therefore, Krishna took on the form of the young, charming cowherd boy, and they took on the form of the gopis, young, charming cowherd girls. But it was Krishna arranged that whole drama, that whole play, if you like, in order to reciprocate with his devotees, paritranaya sadunam, in other words, to please his devotees, to relieve their anxiety in that they wanted to associate with him in the most intimate of ways, in the most pleasing of ways. Actually, their desire was pure in that they wanted to please Krishna. And of course, Krishna's desire was pure. Krishna's desire is always pure in that he wanted to please his devotees. So it's a reciprocation between the devotees and Krishna. So the rasa dance especially has to be understood in the correct context, as it has been mentioned before. Great personalities can transgress material laws, just like Prabhupada says in the purport in the Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna is like the king. The king is given constitutional powers that are that make him above even the laws of the state. So sometimes the king may break the law. But he's not affected by that. So sometimes Krishna, it appears, breaks the laws that he establishes. But he's not affected by that. The example is of the warning in the class that I gave earlier on in the week. The warning is, you know, don't try to imitate Lord Shiva. He may be able to drink an ocean of poison. You try drinking even just a little drop of that poison, you'll be dead. So for us it's poison. But for Krishna it's pure enjoyment. Pure reciprocation between him and his and the devotees. And so they're not degraded, as it is mentioned here, devotees who are on the purely transcendental platform, engaged in rendering, they're not at all contaminated by these activities. And Krishna, also, never contaminated. He's just engaging in his pastime, just like an actor. Prabhupada gives the example of an actor. I think Queen Kunti gives the example of an actor. You are just like an actor on a stage. And, you know, we can see it. Sometimes Krishna appears as a pig. Now, what we, you know, when we appear as a pig, what's that for? That's a punishment for behaving like a pig. Right? And my mum used to say to me, oh, why don't you behave yourself? You're behaving like a little pig. So, you know, when we behave like a pig, then we get punished. Okay, now off for your pig pastimes. None of which are pleasurable. But for Krishna, he appears in the form of a hog. And for him, it is just transcendental pleasure. He's not affected. Actually, it's one of his, you know, this is rather bewildering for the minds of the uneducated. God appears as a pig, as a hog. What a, you know, what's going on here? How could God appear as a hog? Actually, in the latest BTG, there's a story of God is appearing as a fish. But not an ordinary hog or an ordinary fish. You know, when Varaha appeared, there was a problem with Hiranyaksha. Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. And so something needed to be done. The demigods went to approach Lord Brahma. And then all of a sudden, you know, this little thing came out of Lord Brahma's nose. What is this? He was like to take something out of it. I mean, it's quite funny when you think about these pastimes, there's just a certain element of humour in it. That's, you know, what do you usually get out of your nose? So Lord Brahma get, and then all of a sudden there's a little thing, and then it grows into a big form of a hog. But very attractive, very beautiful. Adorned with ornaments and, you know, just very beautiful, very attractive. And of course, also extremely powerful. That's right, when Satyavrata, was it Satyavrata Muni, found Matsya. He found this very small fish. And then the fish was talking to him, appealing to him, "Could you please help me?" Bit of a surprise, this fish is talking to me. The fish said, "Look, can you just put me in a little bigger, you know, I need a fish bowl. I need a bit of space, put me in a fish bowl." So he put him in a fish bowl, then he grew too big for the fish bowl. So can you put me in a pond? So it's interesting. Whenever Krishna appears, And he demonstrates extraordinary pastimes, not conditioned by the regular laws of material nature that everybody else has to conform to. And, you know, as is pointed out by Prabhupada and the Acharyas and by Sukadeva Goswami, Krishna performs these pastimes in order to attract us to him. They're extraordinary. His activities are extraordinary. Not normal. There's a certain element of, well, it's transcendental, as is mentioned here. Eternal. Well, that's another thing. None of these forms change. They're forms that exist eternally. No ignorance for Krishna. It's not on a bodily concept of life. Whereas the forms that we accept are far from transcendental, far from eternal. So for Krishna, he performs these activities in order to attract us, for our benefit. And so therefore, for him, there is no prescriptions, if you like. But for us, there are prescriptions. Chaturvanyam mayajus, what is it? Mayashristam guna karma vibhagasa. According to the modes of material nature that we've acquired, according to the propensity for work that we have, then we have prescribed activities. And in fact, Krishna follows those prescribed activities as well, because as we've been reading in the third chapter, he says that whilst I don't have to follow the rules and regulations, because I'm transcendental, still I do in order to set an example. Although it appears here Krishna's not setting a very good example. Maybe we should send him back to school. Krishna's misbehaving. No. Because he is the supreme transcendence, there is no activity. Na mam karmani limpanti. No activity affects me like it does for the materialistic persons. So, when it comes, as we were discussing the other day, when it comes to following Krishna, we follow his instructions, not his extraordinary example of transcendence, which can easily be misunderstood, because that's the doubt that Maharaj Parikshit is trying to clear here. How come Krishna's misbehaving? So one needs a certain amount of transcendental knowledge and understanding to see Krishna's activities not misbehaving. This is the highest engagement in transcendence, in pure devotional. This is the highest example of pure devotional service. And as is mentioned here, those who are followers of Krishna, even they may study and meditate on these pastimes of the Lord, they're never contaminated by them. Actually, they become thoroughly purified. With a proper understanding of the Rasa-lila, they one becomes thoroughly and completely purified. Not like, as Prabhupada says, like the Mayavadis, they say, you know, we and God are one, so therefore we can also have our Rasa-lila. Mm-hmm. Right? And of course, Prabhupada says, our whole Mayavada idea is a complete debauchery. And it's a degradation of what this is all about. So therefore, we have to be very careful about following the prescriptions that are given to us in order to become purified of our material disease. Just as we have an infection, then we have to take the medicine to get purified from the infection. So, It's interesting. We have this Varnashram system. We have our occupations and we have our ashrams. And basically those are, and the prescriptions that are given for them in order to gradually elevate us, bring us to Krishna consciousness basically. The whole purpose of the Varnashram system, which is created by Krishna, and of course Krishna is above it, but still Krishna himself, he follows the Varnashram system. In the ordinary course of affairs, and Krishna does all of the things that he recommends everybody. Only occasionally does he demonstrate his superiority. Actually, quite a lot. When you think about it, Krishna shows his superiority quite often, quite a bit. But of course, that's to demonstrate his superiority. But we recommend it in order to understand Krishna's transcendental pastimes in their proper perspective, with a proper understanding, and in order to become purified, that we have to follow basic regulated principles. Rules and regulations for ashrams, rules and regulations for occupation, in order to come to Krishna consciousness. Of course, when one comes to Krishna consciousness, then those things may be superfluous. Also, when one is on the transcendental platform, as it is mentioned here, then he can perform any activity, actually. And be free from reaction. This is when one understands that Krishna and devotional service are paritra, purifying, or pavitra, purifying. Then he'll engage wholeheartedly in Krishna's service. When one understands, what is it? Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatpataha. When one understands in truth Krishna's position and his activities are divyam, his birth is divyam, his form is transcendental, not like ours. His activities are transcendental. Then one is free from the reaction of his own work, because he then works for the benefit of Krishna. At the moment we're getting reactions because the activities that we initiate are for our own sense gratification. But when we engage in activities for our sense gratification, what do we get? Reactions. Krishna doesn't get any reaction. Namam karmani limpanti. No reaction for me. Name karma phale spriha. Nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. That's why we engage in activities, because we think, yes, I'll get this, yes, I'll get that. Usually we get the opposite. Or a mix. So when one understands that these activities of Krishna are purely transcendental, and when one aspires for and engages in devotional service, pure devotional service, then one also is elevated to this transcendental platform, where activities performed are basically performed for Krishna's pleasure. And they are free from reaction also. So therefore the prescriptions are there to gradually elevate us to that transcendental platform. That's one of the reasons why we have to follow the rules and regulations, even in devotional service. In the beginning, a person is encouraged, recommended, actually it's absolutely essential that one has to follow the basic principles, regulated principles. Yama and niyama. Don't do this, please do that. And of course, the doctor, if you like, is the spiritual master. And the advanced devotees who can understand, okay, this is the right engagement.
for you so that you will be elevated. So, there can't be any fault in Krishna's performing the Rasa Leela. As is mentioned here. He is the witness of everything. Of everything that is going on within the creation. He's witnessing everything. And he's not affected by it. He knows all secrets. He is the witness within everybody's heart. So what fault is there? If he goes to a secret place, it's not secret actually, because he already knows about it. There are no secrets for Krishna. And in that secret place, he then embraces some of his creation. What's wrong with that? Nothing. That's what I'm saying here. What fault could there be if he goes to a secret place and associates with some of his devotees? No fault. So does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, go for it.
Because my devotees here in the handle of the devotees of the Supreme Lord, sometimes we might think they were a bit more advanced than we actually are, and so they would think, oh yeah, like, I don't need to sleep as much, or I don't need to eat as much, and you might...
Well, I never have that problem, but anyway, go on.
How do we make sure that, you know, we don't do that? How do we just keep normal?
Keep normal? How do we keep normal? Gosh, I haven't worked that out yet.
It's quite inspiring, though, isn't it? You can't, like, you know, do more than we're actually capable of doing. So
yes. We think we're more transcendental than we really are. Well, see, the thing is, Krishna empowers the devotees. And according to the circumstance and according to the situation, sometimes we are actually able to do quite extraordinary things. On a festival day or on a special occasion, we may rise to the occasion. Right? So, and of course, you know, those special occasions are meant for inspiring us, in fact, right? But very often there are those days where we basically have the regular, you know, regulated activities, regular service. So it is not unusual, and it's certainly not bad, to on occasion be inspired and to do extraordinary activities. Right? But by the same token also, we have to learn, and we do learn over time, our limitations. So, you know, maybe for a day or two we might be able to cut down on sleep and not eat as much or whatever. But then we shouldn't start thinking that we're automatically a paramahamsa just because we can do it for a couple, you know, for a special occasion. You know, if you look at personalities like Raghunath Das and you know, the others of the Goswamis, Raghunath Das was sleeping, you know, like 1 or 2 hours a night, and was taking, you know, some buttermilk, six drops, or, you know, a very small amount of sustenance every day, or every second day even sometimes. But how is one able to give up those things? Only by a deep absorption in Krishna consciousness. Deep absorption, so that, practically speaking, the Goswamis forgot. They just forgot to eat and sleep. So So, you know, on a spontaneous platform of devotional service, then, at, you know, at a very high level of purification, then a devotee may be inspired to render service to Krishna in that way. But, you know, we can usually tell that we're not on that platform because, you know, we may forget to eat or sleep, or but after a couple of days, you know what happens? We crash in a heap, you know, and then have to build up the batteries again. So we have to be realists, and realize our limitations. Occasionally we may be able to, you know, on occasion, we may be able to perform extraordinary activities, inspired by the occasion, but on the whole, generally we're recommended yukta hara viharasya, yukta chaita sakarmasu, yukta swapna vibodasya, yoga bhavati dukkaha. We want to transcend, but in order to do that, it's recommended we have to be regulated. Yukta means regulated. Yuktahara. Regulated eating. Yuktahara viharasya. Sleeping. Regulated eating, regulated sleeping. Yukta chaitasa karmasu means regulated activities. Yukta svapna. What svapna mean? Sleep. And bodhasya, awake, being aware, conscious. Yukta svapna bodhasya. Then we can conquer over the ups and downs of existence. So regulation is strongly recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. We have to learn what our limitations are and then work according to the regulations. And whenever we think we've gotten to the Paramahamsa platform, don't worry, you know, wait a couple of days and you'll realise that you're not. You know, you get all strung out and tired, and then you get in a fight with somebody, and then you realise, oh, not as transcendental as I thought I was. Right? That's what happens. Anyway, we're lucky because we have plenty of other devotees to remind us that we're not Paramahamsas. There's plenty of... Prabhu, what are you doing? But, on the whole, I guess, you know, if you look at the activities of the devotees and compare them to those of the materialists, then you can see actually they're quite transcendental. Do you know what I mean? The devotees sleep 6, 7, 8 hours a night, you know, especially if you've had a very heavy, you know, day, working hard, physically hard, especially for the cooks. I know myself, if I work over a flame, it just heats me up, especially in the kitchen, and then I have to sleep longer. I don't know why, but when I work with, because I don't do it very often, but when I do, I notice working next to flames heats you up. And for some reason, at least my system needs more sleep. But if you analyse the behaviour of the devotees, they eat less, they sleep less, they're much more actively engaged than most materialistic people. If you look at it, if you analyse them, they're pretty. Even we may not think, oh, I'm not really a Paramahamsa. You know, we're trying to get up to the level of Raghunath Das, right? But in reality, if you compare the activities of the devotees to the ordinary people, they're actually, you know, very, quite elevated. In fact, do you know what I mean? You know, we're all relative to each other. We think we're all mundaners, but actually we're quite advanced compared to the regular old Joe Blows. Saturday morning, you know, they're all sleeping in till 10, 11 o'clock. Very few devotees sleep till 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. You know, if I'm really wiped out and asleep in, you know, sometimes the school groups ask me, you know, what time did you get up this morning? I slept in, I got up at 6 o'clock. They go, what? You slept in and got up at 6 o'clock. They can't understand that. You know, that for them is like getting up, you know, incredibly early. Yet we're habituated to getting up, you know, before the sun rises. They've never ever experienced that ever in their lives. They haven't had that experience of getting up before the sun rises. It's like, what? What happens then? Does anything happen then? They just don't know. So in one sense, if you analyse the behaviour of the devotees, actually very elevated. Even at our sort of struggling level, we're actually quite elevated by Prabhupada's mercy, by Krishna's mercy. Just by following the rules and regulations of devotional service, we're automatically elevated to quite a high position. Of course, you know, it may take some time, maybe even lifetimes, before we come to the point of a Raghunath Das. And, you know, usually we can see it. There are devotees who do tend to deprive themselves of sleep or whatever, and then, you know, we see in a japa time. In a Bhagavatam class, sleeping. So, you know, they do get their sleep. They get their sleep in any case. Anything else?
How austerity is free one from material issues?